ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, Batestown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Only a minute and a half late to get to the show today. That's not bad.
Well, you know, executive Joe George, and then he's blazing out of here like he's stealing bases for the Cubs now. He puts his head down, and he's too busy. He's just got to fly out of here because he's moving and shaking and moving.
That's good. I'm going to start keeping a record to see the furthest that we get into our show where our show hasn't started. Right now, I haven't tracked before. I doubt today was the longest, but today's the first day I'm tracking it. So 90 seconds is the number to beat, which isn't bad. I mean, that's
well, but
fine.
It's the listener gets screwed because true greatness has got cut short because of the fact that they're trying to stall for more time.
Shots fired. Yeah, I mean, that last Twitter plug, you know, I think if Joe would have not went with that last Twitter plug, which at Jeremy Branham, I think they would have made it. I think they would have made it on time. It's a championship Thursday, Blankers. Houston Cougars. That's why I was out yesterday. I was calling a little Cougar basketball. First year in the league, claiming a Big 12 championship. That's pretty neat.
Just awesome. I got home late, so I was kind of flipping around. I couldn't find the game. But was really excited when I saw the ticker and saw the crawl and saw the win and was happy for you, happy for the squad, and obviously coach. What a great, great first year in the Big 12. I mean, everybody says how difficult it is when you cross leagues, sign up for, you know, join a new league. It's a tougher league. And to just do what they've done is just another true testament to Kelvin, to the program, and just the fun ride they've been on.
Yeah, great story, awesome story. Lots left to do. We'll talk Houston Cougar basketball further along in the show as well. But if you want to get in and talk about it, 713-780-ESPN. Certainly not opposed to that. We just go where you drive us, 713-780-3776. On the professional level, Rockets played a basketball game yesterday, homecoming for James Harden. Rockets built a 20-point lead there in the second quarter. Clippers would storm back, just dominated the second half. I watched it back this morning. Outscored the Rockets 36-29 in the third and then allowed 42 points in the fourth quarter. Just the defensive effort there in the second half, not good enough to beat a quality team in the NBA.
No, you know what, Jeremy? And I rewatched the final 8 minutes or so this morning, and it's just frustrating because it's a lot about just kind of experience in those moments and being able to execute and getting buckets at key times. It's one thing to say the Clippers really weren't playing their best basketball in the first half. They got it going. They were unbelievably hot from three. But you had all kinds of opportunities, and you could just go down the list. Alpi had two free throws. He missed them both. You know, Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet both got into the paint and then got up in the air and got caught. They threw the ball away where there were three possessions where they didn't even get a shot off. And you're like, see, this is where a young team is going through growing pains. And those situations are going to get better. But that's a game they should have won last night. So that's why it's tough to swallow this late in the season going, that would have been another quality win against a quality team. Where you'd go, hey, we took two out of three from Phoenix. We could have beat the Clippers. You had Alpi go off and beat the Spurs. They're playing good basketball. That's a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, I'm okay with the loss.
I know you are. I actually am too. And this is kind of the script that we've laid out about, hey, play good for 3.5 quarters. You know, show that you're getting it. Show that the players you want to see develop are developing. It's still tough because you were in command of that game.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at that game in isolation and in a vacuum and you take away everything else, yeah, I mean, it's a game that you can win. Now, it's a 20-point lead in the first half versus a 20-point lead in the second half. A little bit of a difference there. Clippers, boy, man, they get down 20 and they go on a 10-0 run. Like, it's a 10-point game in 2 minutes.
Yep.
They quickly made it a 10-point game in 2 minutes,
I mean,
which was frustrating.
They have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and you don't.
Yep.
And those guys made massive shots down the stretch.
You didn't mention Harden there. Was that intentional?
I did not. Well, Jimmy, Slim Jim got off to a quick start. He had 8 or 10 in the first quarter. And then he kind of plodded around. He missed a three when everybody else was making threes in the fourth quarter. But look, to his credit, he has a high basketball IQ. He sees the floor well and passes well. And he's the kind of good – he's probably the perfect facilitator slash a guy that can be your third scorer with a team that's that good, and he can hide behind. He doesn't have to be the man at this point in his career, but he could take advantage of matchups, and he can see the floor and get guys in position to score very well.
The things that I was actually – first off, that technical with 48 seconds to play in a three-point game, I'm not one to bang on officials, as we know. You can't call a tech there.
That's a softie right there. That's where you got to know the situation and know, yes, normally when you do any demonstrative move towards an official, it's supposed to be an instant T, but you also got to know the situation. It's a three-point game with less than a minute to play. You just don't call that there.
No, I thought the same thing. My favorite two plays of the game, Cam Whitmore diving on a loose ball. I didn't know that he had that in him. I wasn't familiar with your defensive game, Cam Whitmore. Now, it led to a 1 second on the shot clock buzzer beating 2-point shot by Paul George, if I remember correctly. And then Jalen Green with a hustle play to save a loose ball. I like the young guys playing hard. I like the young guys playing some winning basketball. And I know Jalen didn't have like the best scoring game. He didn't have he's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, 15 points, 2 of 6 from three. Wasn't awful. It wasn't like a 35-40 point burger like he's had a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. But just seeing that winning basketball is something that encourages me. And people don't want to hear this, and I don't think that it's going to be a popular thing to say. 713-780-3776. I actually think the Rockets are close, and I want to define close. I don't think they're close to being a championship contender, although I think that if you get the most out of your young core, maybe it can turn into that. Some shrewd moves along the way, et cetera, et cetera. I actually think the Rockets are close to being a playoff team, though. You look at their home record, 21-11. Like, okay, that's the makings of a playoff team. Where are they bad? They're awful on the road. 6-24 in 30 games. They have 6 wins in 30 games on the road. It's abysmal. It's embarrassing. Blah, 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 blah. But it's also the sign of a young team. Young teams struggle on the road. Like, that's the biggest thing that I want to see this offseason. Like, we talk tanking. Try to improve the ping pong balls. Maybe they'll bounce in your favor and your pick will land in the top four so you don't have to give it to Oklahoma City. The Brooklyn pick's going to be in the lottery. Get a little bit lucky there, blah, 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 blah. Maybe you can make that, package that with a young player, trade for a really good one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing that I think is the most important thing this offseason, more than anything else, anything that you can do, free agent signing, draft pick, your own players with like a trade or something like that, the one thing that I need to see the most with this offseason is development. Because you have players that have a chance. Like Jalen Green, you make him more consistent. That's development. If he can become more consistent with development, okay, you got something there. Cam Whitmore has shown a lot of positive things as a rookie. Develop that. See what he looks like in year two. Same thing with Amin Thompson. I think Jabari Smith has taken strides this year. Can he take that same amount of stride next season? And then Alpi Şengün. Like Alpi Şengün, we talk about him as an all-star. Like, where is he for most improved player of the year? Like, he should be in that conversation. What does he look like in year four? So more important than a trade, a free agent signing, a draft pick, the most important thing this offseason for the Rockets is developing their own.
It is, and I think along with that, what I was going to say is, just like we just talked about, execution down the stretch, you just have learning moments in that development along the way, too. It's tough to say you lost last night, but you learned a lesson about execution in the fourth quarter and late in games. You learned a lesson about fouling jump shooters and what to do and what not to do, especially when you're playing all-star level talent that know how to take advantage of you being inexperienced and kind of the way you were playing them. So you learn those things along the way. And the only way you're really truly going to learn those things is to be in the moment and be a part of those situations to get better. We continue to watch Amen get better over and over as he gets more minutes. It's phenomenal. And you get what I have been asking for a long time, which is more Amen Thompson, less Holiday after the trade deadline, because that's truly what you need to see. Cam Whitmore, look, the one thing that Coach Udoka finally talked about it last night, but we knew he could score. We know he's talented offensively, but where they were trying to get him and get some messages sent to him, especially early on when they sent him down, was you got to play defense, you got to play every play, you got to play both ends of the floor no matter if the ball's going in or not. You're seeing that kind of development. And then what you've seen from Alpi has just been phenomenal, because he's finally got some coaches that can really teach him some things. And then the other thing is Jalen's getting better. Jalen's getting better every game. And it seems like he's finally bought in. He's understanding that when he does buy in, he's going to get his, even if he goes 1 for 10 from three, there's other ways to help this team. And then, like you said, because of those things and that combination of the players we're talking about, we even said Tari Eason because he's been out, your nucleus is good enough, if you keep them together, to kind of have something brewing here.
Yeah, I don't like when you use the word buying in, or a couple of words, whenever you're talking about Jalen, because I think the buy-in was there, and we could disagree on that, but he was never like a malcontent. Like, he was never an issue. He was never a problem. I think, for me, I think he just didn't know what he didn't know. I think he was learning winning basketball, and because he's been playing 20 years in an AAU circuit, and there's no winning basketball, it was more about conditioning him to play winning basketball. I think he always had a fine attitude. Now, there's times when he pouted and stuff like that, but I think that's part of growing. I think that's part of developing. That's part of maturing. And he's still very, very young. That's why I want to see the development. Like, I want to see what he looks like year two with Ime Udoka. And if we have the early goings of next season, the first couple of months where it's like, okay, there's zero development here. Okay, well, it's time to bail. It's time to go in a different direction. It's time to plan without Jalen Green. But I want one off season, Jalen Green, knowing what winning basketball is all about, and then see what he looks like next year.
Yeah, look, to me, it's semantics in terms of the terminology, because I think you're right. What it does boil down to is the only system he's ever known is basically, here's the ball, go get a bucket, and isolation, isolation, isolation. And that is being a product of AAU and being on the fast track to try and get to the league, that coaches just basically run that out there because they want him to play for them. Now you're getting into a situation where you understand at the highest level the game is played, it's a different ball game, literally. And it takes time. And because he's had so much success by just getting the ball and just going to the bucket or scoring or shooting, he had the biggest adjustment because he had the most success with it. Because Cam played at Villanova, they made him play a system. Mm-hmm. You know, these other guys, wherever they came from, played more of a system at some point in their careers. But now that he's actually playing the system, that's why I keep going back to that game the other night. He had 20-some points. He was 1 of 10 from 3. Normally, when he's 1 of 10 from 3, he's looking for a call. He's not getting back. He's kind of upset. And he found a way to impact the game in so many other ways. And he didn't turn the ball over. That's where I think like he's really reaping the benefits now and seeing like how good it can be for him.
That's why that hustle play by him was like, okay, like that's winning ball. Like playing a little defense, hustling on rotations. Okay, like maybe he's starting to figure out what it takes to play on a winning basketball team. And that's why I think the Rockets are close to being a playoff team. Like, okay, we go 500 on the road next year. Develop these younger guys. I think that they're too deep at most every position. Like, Fred VanVleet's going to be back. You have Amin Thompson. Okay, that's pretty good, too deep at your point guard spot. Your shooting guards, Jalen Green, Cam Whitmore. Okay, that's pretty good with your shooting guards. I might have said Amin and Fred VanVleet shooting guards. Of course, I'm in point guard there. Small forward, you have Dylan Brooks. I'm not sure you have that backup to him that you really want just yet. I think that's where a knockdown shooter could really come into play. Your four, you have Jabari and Tari. And then your fives, you're going to have Alpi and Steven Adams. Like, yep. Next year, to me, next year's playoffs are bust. And I think that you can try to do it with this core, but if it doesn't get to the playoffs next year, it's like, okay, let's reinvent who we are.
Yeah, that's when you maybe have to entertain what Udoka, the rumors were he wanted to do, which is infuse this roster with a little bit more veteran leadership and veteran talent than all the youth that you have. Maybe that's the signal if they don't get it done. And you got to be clear, too, in the fact that I'm with you. I think that team can fight for a playoff spot next year. I don't think that team instantaneously is a championship, you know, second round of the playoffs type team. But there's enough talent on that roster, even though the West is loaded, that team can compete. That team can compete for making a playoff run because they are young, they can run, and if they play the right style on both ends, they can give a lot of teams fits in this league night in, night out.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. A busy show. It's a Thursday, so Bad Take Boulevard coming up. What are the worst takes of the week? Someone on the Twitch, a couple of people on the Twitch said that Joe made a comparing Cam Whitmore to Kobe Bryant today.
I would hope not.
Did you hear that?
I didn't hear
Bryant,
it.
Bryant, did you hear that?
Oh, my goodness.
What did Joe say?
The aftermath of Paul making fun of it, but I didn't hear the actual take.
Yeah, we're going to have to
this is
to
coming
back.
Up yesterday where he – what did he say? The Lakers aren't a winning franchise?
Well, that's
it'll be in the segment, though, so we'll get to it.
Joe, call to defend yourself, 713-780-3776. I don't know why I'm giving you the number. You should know the number. But a busy show. Dalton Schultz locked up a couple of days ago. I got to thinking a little bit about this. Does the Dalton Schultz deal change how you feel about running back? Does it change how you feel about Robert Woods? Very busy show today. It's going to be a fun show. Kyle Tucker projection numbers. Would you sign them? All that stuff. But when we come back, do the Rockets have their tier one superstar that they can feel confident can lead them to a title? Seven, not next year. You know, just in the in the near future. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube, just search ESPN Houston. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5.
Guys, let me take a few minutes here to tell you about Vanderford Air Conditioning and Plumbing, because I'm telling you right now, they're the newest member to the ESPN family, and they are exactly what you're going to need when we feel that these hot temperatures are coming back. I heard Justin Stapleton on Channel 2 today say that this might be the last weekend with cooler temperatures that are in the 60s for the foreseeable future, maybe to the holidays next year. You know that heat is coming. With it comes the humidity, and with it comes the absolute possibility your air conditioning unit can go on the fritz. That's why I recommend you see and call Vanderford Air, because they take care of you, and they have all these guarantees that assure you're going to get the best care, the best technology, and it's all going to be taken care of for you, because they always give you the best value at the lowest cost to you. That's guaranteed. Comfort assurance guarantees, even the temperature, the quality workmanship guarantee, it will work well. Performance guarantee, operate at factory standards, and 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. You can't beat that, because that's what you need all season long, especially when you know the heat is coming. They're 100% risk-free guarantee. The single biggest concern most homeowners have when repairing or replacing their HVAC units is choosing the right contractor to do the work. If you call them, you can trust they're going to do the work as promised, on time, and guarantee same-day air conditioning service. You know that's important. Maybe not now, but when it's 110 and your AC goes on the fritz, you want someone there the same day. Check them out today, because it is a game changer for you with the heat coming. Go to VanderfordAir.com or call them 281-557-COOL.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We got to know more about this comparison that Joe made. Greg told us that he compared Cam Whitmore to Kobe Bryant. Brian, can we call him? Can we just cold call Joe George, see if he answers? I want to give him a chance to defend himself. Before we just...
Is he still in the building?
Crush him. I don't care if he's in the building. Let's call him instead. Oh, I'd rather call him. I wanted to hear the ringtone and do all that stuff.
Here he comes. Oh, because... Hey, and now he's giddy and happy instead of being
he's getting the Killer Bee rub.
Yeah, exactly. He gets the Killer Bee rub instead of, like, charging out of the studio, hustling and moving and shaking because he's so busy now.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I'm not there today, so I don't have to see him. Joe, what was the
comp here? He's not on yet. He's slowly... taking his time because he's a star.
What do you mean?
Now.
He's not behind a microphone? Like, what is it? What do you mean on?
He's plugging
like, all he
his
has to do is get behind
in,
the mic. He doesn't
relaxing.
Even need the headphones.
Okay.
He needs a microphone.
I feel to hear you.
No, you don't. Joel could relay the message.
Okay. I did not.
Great. You know what it's about. I get to be the messenger.
This is fake news. I did not compare Cam Whitmore to Kobe Bryant.
Thank God.
Good.
I said that if. He ever played in the Olympics like Pau Gasol did, Alperen Şengün, and Cam Whitmore was playing for Team USA and barreled through him like Kobe did to the Gasol, that Şengün should punch him in the face and not be like Gasol and just lay on the ground.
So you basically got Dalton Schultz.
And then Mapes, that traitor, yes, he's the one who called – I just compared Cam Whitmore to Kobe Bryant.
That's a Yahoo Sports headline right there.
Yeah, this is Mapes fake news disparaging my bad takes. I have bad takes. I know it. But he made it worse.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure how you got to Cam in the Olympics, Alpi in the Olympics, Cam as Kobe running through, Alpi as Pau Gasol.
Because
that's quite the imagination.
Because Shaq said that Alperen Şengün reminds him of Pau Gasol.
He did say that, and then he told him to go play for the Lakers.
Yeah. So because he reminds him of Pau Gasol, you went to Olympics and Kobe running through his chest.
Yeah, I said don't be like Pau Gasol in that one moment.
Lakers are a winning franchise.
Man. Fair enough. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. That's all the time we need from you. Okay, that's not at all comparing Cam to Kobe. Craig, you landed on Bad Take Boulevard. You made the list. That's not comparing.
Well,
Cam
don't
to
you
Kobe
think
Bryant
that Mapes should make the list for putting him there?
No, I think he was being funny. I like funny. Funny's right. Good. I like funny. I'm funny. People think I'm just hilarious and have a great sense of humor and tons of entertainment. 713-78, it's a joke, Blankers.
I was going to say we missed you yesterday, but you would have told us that we should have, so it's fine.
Well, I already know that you did. I didn't have to. I don't like to be redundant and state the obvious. So there's that.
Joel doesn't speak for both of us, but
well, there you go.
That's fine.
Joe doesn't. I don't think Blankers understands comedy.
Yeah, me never. No, I never. You know, I need to work with a comedian someday. I'll figure it out.
I think that. I think you have a tough time getting jokes.
Okay, I think I could say I think a lot of things.
What was the word I was looking for? I can't remember. 713-780-3776. Do the Rockets have their tier one superstar that can lead them to a title?
I honestly, the answer to that question is no. I don't think so. I think that they have an all-star caliber player in the future in Alpi Şengün, but I don't think that he is the kind of calibered go-to superstar type player that takes a team very, very far in the playoffs. I think that he could possibly continue to progress and get to a different level. I love the development I've seen from last year to this year, but I think it's too quick to just jump at it and say right now, Alpi is your go-to star player that can take you to the promised land. Because I don't think
the question's right now, though. The question's not like in this moment. It's do they have a player on the roster that can become that?
Possibly. Again, because just what you talked about. We're wanting more, seeing some development, needing more development to see what these players can truly be. I think Cam Whitmore could possibly end up being a star in this league. If he figures out the defensive end and just tweaks some shot selection things a little bit, as he continues to get better, he could be a go-to guy. I think obviously the shot is something everybody's going to question from three. But he's got all the tools to do everything on the floor to where he also has the possibility. I don't think Jabari has the possibility to take it to that level, but he could be very good. And, of course, Jalen's the wild card. Jalen has all the talent in the world. If he can harness it and figure it out, then he's the third guy that could be that guy along with Alpi. That's four. So I think that as long as you got four guys that are capable and possible, that, yes, you could have them. I just haven't seen one guy yet that I'm convinced is that guy.
Ime talks about balanced offense and not just like one focal point. Like he wants to be a very team-oriented offense. Mm-hmm. So like that's one caveat to this. I think that they do. I think that they have their – like he's not there yet. He's certainly not there yet. I don't think that – like my answer is Alpi Şengün. I think Alpi can be the best player on a team that wins a title someday. Has work to do. He's not there yet. There's no one there yet. That's why they're not in the playoffs. It's why they're the 10th team in the Western Conference. But I think Alpi can work there, or work to get there. What do you want to use as the baseline here? Alpi's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. This is his third year in the NBA. I want to compare him to somebody else. Should I compare him to his age 21 year, or should I compare him to his third year in the NBA? I want you to decide.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about what's the best way to do that. Because, you know, obviously guys mature and develop at different paces.
We can just talk about both.
Because it's unfair to say the obvious comparison that people make is he is the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's unfair to him to be compared to a multi-time MVP and NBA champion.
Sure.
Because the bar is just way too high for him. And that's not taken away from anything from him. It's really just a compliment to how good the Joker's been.
But to me, it's more about the ceiling. Like Joker's ceiling's a two-time MVP. Alpi's not there. Alpi's not near an MVP level. Can he get there someday? It doesn't seem like it would be all that realistic, but maybe. It depends on the plight of the player. If you look at where Alpi's at now, he's 21 years old. It's the third year in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He's averaging 21 points and 9.5 rebounds and 5 assists. He's up from 15 last year. It's why I think he should be in the conversation for most improved player in the NBA. So 21, 9.5, and 5. Like that's really a good offensive player. That's an offensive
really
player
good.
You can go through. If you look, and he's 21 years old. If you look at Nikolai, whenever he was 21 years old, you look at the Joker, he averaged 16.5 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. Okay. Alpi's right there with Jokic in his age 21 season. Now, Jokic did take a step up in his third year, but again, Alpi Şengün currently averaging 21, 9.5, and 5. The Joker in year 3, 18.5, 10.5, and 6. Again, very comparable numbers in their third year. So, yes, the Joker's ceiling's the best player in the league. The Joker's ceiling is the best player in the league on a championship-winning team. But if you look at the first 3 years of the Joker's career, the first 3 years of Alpi's career, very, very similar. So, yes, Alpi has a long way to go to be the MVP. But he's already a focal point on the offense. I think he's a really good offensive player. He would need to develop quite a bit more. I think he's got some skill. Like, I think he has some left in the tank. I don't think he's reached his ceiling. I think he still has room to grow. So I think that they do. Like, I think Alpi Şengün can turn into that player and be that guy for the Rockets to be their star, their go-to guy, their player that can lead them to the promised land. A long way to go, but capable.
Yeah, no, and I think, Jeremy, some of the things that you're talking about are the things that we saw last night, right? We need a guy that's going to be able to make his free throws down the stretch in big moments. But that he'll get better at that. And in the more situations he's in like that, he's got the touch. You can see the fact that when he does the flamingo and he does the kind of shots that he shoots, whether you like it or not, the touch itself, the backspin, the fact that the ball, you know, it's not a hard landing on the rim. He's got good soft touch. He's got great moves around the basket. I think the free throw shooting is going to get better. And a lot of these guys, you see it get better as they get more established in the league. So that's encouraging to me. But because of the fact that he's got that offensive touch and not just shooting the basketball, the way he sees the floor, his passing ability, we see it in a lot of those oh wow moments when he makes the no looks, but more so just making the right passes on cuts and you know when he gets double teamed. The way Dream used to do it, the way guys that are really good in this league do it. He has there's no ceiling right now as to how high his upside is because he's got such an unbelievable skill set.
Yeah, see, I think he's a good free throw shooter. He's not in crunch time. That's the difference. Like, I'll take 70% for my center. Like, he's a 71% career free throw shooter. He's fine as a free throw shooter. He kind of melts in crunch time.
You know who else did? You know who did that early in his career? Dream.
Yeah. Yeah,
Dream was.
Hey, whoa. You're not comparing Alpi to Dream.
No, I just want to put that out there.
Joe got slandered. I don't want you to get slandered.
Yeah, no, Sean Mapes, you slow your roll. No, what I'm saying is that as a big man early in his career, Dream was a sub 70% free throw shooter, and he got better. So that is the point I'm making. Alpi, I firmly believe and expect, is going to continue to get better and better at the free throw line. So that's not something that I'm going to worry about long term. It's just something that he's got to kind of polish up if he wants to get to the level we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I just – bad free throw in crunch time, I think, is how I'd say it. Because 70% from a center is fine. I think he has a chance. He's got a chance. Long way to go. Like, I'm not saying he's there right now, obviously. But I do think he has a chance to turn into that player for the Rockets. 713-780-ESPN, 8807. Are there more than 10 players in the league that can lead a team to a championship? Currently, presently, probably not. Like, right now in this moment. But that's development. Like, that's what we're talking about. Like, Giannis, early in his career, he wasn't leading the Bucks to a title, not even close. But once he developed and reached the prime of his career, there he was. Same thing with Jokic. Jokic in the first few years wasn't leading nobody to the finals, but developed his game. He polished. He reached his peak. Became an MVP that could lead his team to the championship. So there's probably not more than 10 players currently in the NBA that can do that, but there's probably 35, 40, 50 that can have the chance to develop into that.
You're absolutely right. And I don't know if 10 is the right number, but it's close, right? Because I think we could rattle off several.
Yeah, give or take.
Right off the top, yeah. But I think that's the good news if you are, you know, looking at the big picture for this Rockets team. We don't know what we don't know, but we've seen enough, especially from Alpi, that you definitely have one clear front runner for a guy that has the capabilities and the skill set and the possibilities to do that. You have three other guys that I rattled off that as we continue to watch them develop, the same thing could be said because of what we've already seen, because we don't see these gross limitations that we think are never going to get better. Because we know there are guys in this league that come in and look, even some of the most grotesque looking jump shots in the history of the league with the Ball family and some of the things we've seen in the past can be fixed. Jason Kidd came into this league without a jump shot. It can be fixed. So yeah, it takes longer when you're looking at those situations. Aside from Amen's jump shot from three, for the most part, the guys we're talking about that have the possibility of taking it to that kind of level don't show you those kind of limitations.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, 6146. The Rockets are one star away from being a decent playoff team. Donovan Mitchell, question mark. That was a name that Kelly Eco brought up yesterday with you guys, right?
Yep.
Are you a fan of that move? And, like, what do you think the price tag would be for that?
See, I think on a trade, I think that the price tag would be rather high because, look, the way Cleveland's playing right now, and it's a small market team that's probably never going to get back to the LeBron era in terms of being able to get other players that want to come and play in Cleveland, that it would be a tough loss for them. But to me, that's the – I don't want to hear Bridges anymore. If I'm talking about a true superstar caliber player to take this team to the next level, I don't think Mikal Bridges is that guy. I know Donovan is. And if I can get Donovan Mitchell on this squad with the talent, some of the talent – because you're going to have to give up some of that talent to get him. But if you can keep some of that talent here, and especially if you pair him with Alpi and you get him and you keep Tari and maybe one of the other guys – you still have the ability, and especially if you know, for one more year, you'd have Fred VanVleet, or maybe you could trade Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks in that deal, and I'd be ecstatic to get the contracts off. But Donovan Mitchell's the kind of guy I'm talking about when you're hearing these rumors about trade for a superstar. Bridges ain't a superstar, in my opinion, and Donovan Mitchell is.
Yeah, Bridges, no way. I'm even hesitant to do the Mitchell trade right now, like this offseason.
Is that because of his age?
A little bit, and plus, like, you do have a surplus of young talent, so I totally understand packaging some of it together, draft picks, and then trading for that one dude that can come in and make you a playoff team. So, like, I wouldn't hate it. Like, I wouldn't die on that tally. But at the same time, like, again, like, I want to see this team develop for one off season with a winning head coach playing winning basketball, because a lot can change in a year. Look at Alpi this year from last year. What if Jalen Green makes that improvement from this year to next year? First time he's been really coached in his life. So I don't want to give up on it too early. I think next year's trade deadline is whenever you look to make that type of move.
Yeah, look, I think I didn't mention Jabari, and you might have a different opinion
than me.
Yeah,
I like
Jabari's game. I think Jabari has a ceiling. And I don't think that Jabari fits that same mold of kind of that unlimited ceiling of the guys that I rattled off. And that's not a disrespect to Jabari, because we've talked about this in the past. If Jabari's ceiling can get to Chris Bosh level, that's phenomenal. But if it doesn't, and he averages a double-double, and he's a good spot-up three-point shooter, and he can defend, he has a position on this team.
See, I think he's a really good role player on a really good team. Yep. I don't think he can be a star, per se. I think he can be a unique role player where he can get you a double-double. He can shoot 40% from three, you know, his best years, and then be a really good defender. And I think that that's very, very valuable for a playoff team. Not a star. I'm with you. I don't think he can be a star, but I think he can be very valuable in that type of role.
Agreed.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Kyle Tucker. 8 years, $204 million. Would you do that if you're the Astros? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank on Branham. 204, 8 years for Kyle Tucker. That's the latest projection from The Athletic. Do you give that? 713-780-3776. Couple texts here first. 6856. Sounds like B-Ham. Needs some tea. I'm a gamer. It's my flu game. 6-1.
Wasn't that Key from L.A.?
Is it? I don't know.
I think so.
I don't remember their numbers. I don't memorize their numbers. If they don't put their name in the text, I'd have no idea who it is.
Fair.
I don't remember. I guess I could. That would be an easy one to do. It'd probably be easier than any other because he has a very unique area.
Exactly.
Going. Yeah, so I could see where I just don't pay attention to that sort of stuff because I'm a noob. 3311, I love Joe's bad takes. I just wish he'd defend them and not abandon them when Sean or Paulie challenges them. There you go, Joe. A little self-help.
A little constructive criticism from the experts.
I love bad takes, too. I'm a big fan of bad takes. Tony22, love the intro song. I'm getting blasted right now. You do you, Tony22.
Who the heck is Phyllis?
I don't know who Phyllis is. Maybe he's calling Brian Phyllis just for the fun of it.
I don't get it.
I think it's just like a pet name.
But you told me I don't get any jokes, so then I have to work on it.
You're very – I don't know the word I was going to use. It's like the opposite of gullible, because you're not gullible. It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it. 713-780-3776. All right, The Athletic with a projection on a Kyle Tucker extension. Mm-hmm. 8 years, $204 million. That's a $25.5 million AAV. Are you giving Kyle Tucker north of $200 million on an eight-year extension?
Well, the only thing that scares me is the 8 years, because I think that as we continue to see baseball is never going to go away, the revenue's never going to decrease, that I think that that's going to be, as the contract goes on, I don't think the value is going to, I mean, I don't think the AAV is going to be what kills you. It's just the length of time that Kyle Tucker is going to have sustainability in his abilities. And we talk about return on investment dwindling greatly in the last couple of years of a long-term deal. The only thing that the $210 million really doesn't scare me all that much because of the fact that the AAV is very reasonable. It's just that 8 years is scary to me. I would say, you know what, because of the fact that then you've got him and Yordan locked up and you're really starting to continue to keep this thing going. Man, that's tough. I'm going to say no because of the 8 years.
0783, heck yeah. He is always healthy, 2 exclamation marks. For once, I'd love for the Astros to be the Yankees / Dodgers, exclamation mark. Pay them all, 4 exclamation marks. 8807, 8200, sign it now in all capital letters. So Kyle Tucker is going to be 27 years old this year. So if you give him an 8-year extension, I'm assuming you're giving him the extension after next year, which would be his final year under club control. So now 27, 28, and then the contract extension would kick in that following year. 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36. This goes against my philosophy of paying big money to guys into their mid-30s.
The big thing, though, is that it's more affordable than most of those contracts.
Your 25 and a half isn't, like, crazy. Like, the average annual value is not crazy. I just don't want to commit a huge chunk of money to a player into their mid-30s. And I know Kyle Tucker's been healthy. Like, he's not been a George Springer type, where George Springer, you could count on, you know, 2 trips to the injured list every single year. You could count on him missing 20 to 25 games every single year. But Kyle Tucker, to me, is the George Springer, like, comparison here for players that left. I would say a healthier version of George Springer. But look how George Springer has played once he entered his 30s and in Toronto, even if you eliminate injuries. Like, let's eliminate the games played for a moment and then just look at the actual production of when George Springer left. 907 OPS, 814 OPS, 732 OPS. Players usually don't sustain their level of play into their 30s. Only, like, the really great players do. Like, Jose Altuve has done it from an offensive perspective, not so much like defensively, and he doesn't run as much as he used to, but still offensively he's as good as he ever once was. Players usually don't sustain their level of production into their 30s. That's why I'm anti-paying big money to guys in their 30s. I agree with you, the AAV does not spook me here. 25 and a half is super reasonable. That would be awesome. I just can't commit $200 million to a guy that's going to be turning 30 by the time this contract kicks
in. That's why
Or the first couple of years of the contract.
See, that's why I would be more on board with keep the AAV the same and do it for less years, and you might be able to sway me. But, yeah, because it hasn't been their philosophical way of doing contracts anyway, but, two, because of the fact that the fall-off could be so drastic that you could get into a really, really – a pitfall situation that could kind of handcuff you a little bit. That's why I don't mind the AAV. I just hate the years.
Yeah, I'm actually completely opposite of you guys on this. Look, I think we've seen, and I was trying to find it on SpoTrack. They don't have it. Maybe they've updated the website. I'm not sure, but we've seen projections for Kyle Tucker go up north of where Bobby Witt Jr. what he got in that, which was like 9 years, $280 million. So I would absolutely take the savings here. I don't think Kyle Tucker would take it, if I'm being quite honest. This projection honestly feels low, but if you would take it, I would, to borrow the term we use for Byron Murphy, if he fell to 23, I'd race to the podium to sign it. The 8 years, sure, it's concerning. It takes you age 36, and I do get the concerns about that, but this isn't Yordan, who can't even play 150 games. This isn't a guy who is constantly hurt. And even as much as the AAV is of value now, by the time you get to his mid-30s, by the time you get to age 34, age 35, that $25 million compared to the other top contracts for outfielders at that time, you know, 6-7 years from now, is going to be even more value. So even if his production drops off, the way that baseball contracts will go up will make this even more of a value. So I really even wouldn't worry about his production dropping off in his mid-30s.
I'm worried about the production. I hear you on the $25.5 million doesn't break you.
But
if you're paying a guy $25.5 million and he kind of is a shell of it, like if he turns into George Springer, like who he was last year, that's a corner outfielder who's hitting below average in an outfield, like in a position where you need offense. Like corner outfield positions, you should be getting offense. So if he regresses into his 30s, most players do, and isn't living up to the $25.5 million, so now you're paying a right fielder, a corner outfielder where you need offense, $25.5 million, which isn't, again, like going to crush you, kill you, but you're not getting any offensive production from a spot where you need offensive production.
I mean, it's absolutely fair, but I just don't see anything in Tucker's profile that suggests he's going to have the long-term injury concerns that
it's not injury concerns. It's not. I'm not worried about the injuries like with Kyle Tucker because he hasn't had the injury concerns.
Well,
I'm worried about natural regression of a baseball player who slips into their 30s. Well, I said eliminate the injuries when we're looking at Springer and just take the raw numbers.
Okay.
Let's eliminate the games played. It's not an injury concern of the 30s. It's natural regression of baseball players whenever they turn 30. Their best years are in their late 20s. And then they start to fade away into their early 30s.
It's just the thing is that, yeah, injury aside, we know that the worst case examples for teams are Miggy and Pujols and guys like that. But when you look at Kyle Tucker, the biggest thing is that, you know, you can find you just don't want something that's going to be that kind of ultimate kind of stumbling block when you have everything else kind of lined up to where you've avoided this for so long. You've avoided the long-term, you know, deal. And if you can get a shorter-term deal, which, again, I agree with you, Brian, I don't think he's signing this deal. But if he had the Yordan deal was so ultimately perfect for the Astros but still worked out for Yordan and it's a steal, he already said he wasn't signing up for that. And I think that he's going to use the Witt contract as something that he's going to chase. And unless it's like this year's market where you just feel like he's just not going to see the takers anymore and teams are getting smart and wising up, he's going to chase Witt money before he even considers this.
Hey, Witt's 3 years younger, too. So, like, you know, that's part of it. But then Tucker's, like, closer to free agency. That's part of it. I also feel like a lot of times we look at these years like, oh, yeah, no big deal. But we don't really realize how quickly things change in sports. Like, I just pulled up offensive leaders in 2019, just real quick. So that was basically 5 years ago because you're going into the 2024 season. You look at some of the best players, like we just go home runs. Eugenio Suarez hit 49 home runs in 2019. Like he's still around. He's still playing baseball. He's 32 years old.
For Cincinnati?
He's nowhere near. Yeah, he had 49 home runs for Cincinnati
that
year.
I didn't realize he had a year like that.
Yeah, he went nuts that year.
That's a great hitter's park.
Great hitter's park, sure. But, I mean, 49 home runs, and then you look at, okay, well, he did that when he was 27 years old, and then you see regression. Now he's 31 years old, and the Mariners got rid of him. Cody Bellinger hit 47 home runs that year. Now he's had, like, a career renaissance, which is, like, really cool. Alex Bregman hit 41 home runs in 2019. Like, he's not that type of player anymore, and Alex Bregman's approaching the age of 30. Like, your best years are in your late 20s. So I am very hesitant of paying a guy a lot of money on a long-term deal into their 30s. It's just my normal philosophy. Now, to Brian's point, which I think is a good one, $25.5 million is not like this Miguel Cabrera $40 million a year type of deal. So that's where the trade-off's at. I don't like doing it, but the AAV's low enough to where it's like, okay, like I don't like it. I don't like it, but all right, like okay, whatever. But I wouldn't do it personally.
That's where I started. Like the AAV, I'm sign me up right now if he does a 5-year deal. Just take the Witt deal and say, okay, if he's 3 years younger, knock 3 off of it. Give me a 5-year deal at that AAV. And I'm in all in every day and saying, I hope he takes it because I don't think he would. But I sure if he did, I'd be ecstatic.
Yeah, I just like specifically like the type of contracts that we think of these as being these massive anchors that really tie teams down and limit their ability to do things, building their team going forward. I mean, obviously, the two obvious examples which have been brought up have been Pujols and Miguel Cabrera. But this deal would obviously not take Kyle Tucker to an age as old as Miggy and Pujols were at the end of their contract. And plus, being at an AAV that is already, to me, and I think we all agree on this, an absolute value. By the time you get to year 6, year 7, even if the production drops off, the value is only going to increase as the overall contracts for outfielders and star players go up. So even if its production does drop, I think it's going to be in line with the savings compared to the other right fielders in the market.
I think it's a good point. I just don't want lack of offensive production in a premium offensive position. Because if you're getting below average offense from a corner outfielder, I don't think your offense is going to be very good. And that's part of my reasoning here. 8-8, because I agree with what you say. I just can't look at those years and be like, okay, well, we're going to accept below average offense from an offensive premium position.
And if you look at it too, obviously it goes back to the texter that said just once sign everybody and be like the Yankees or Dodgers. You don't have the revenue streams and the overall value that those teams have to kind of endure and survive. Think about all the bad contracts they've signed and taken on. I mean, Stanton's the latest one. Jacoby Ellsbury was awful when they made that move to get him from the Red Sox, and he never panned out. They always throw way, way, way too many years and too much money. It's just that they have money growing off trees, and it doesn't bother them like it would bother a smaller situation.
Yeah, they can throw money at bad money and recover, where other teams don't have that capability. 8807, you can't use 2019. That was peak for everyone. Balls were juiced, and everyone was cheating. Okay, just look at the natural progression of every single baseball player that has ever existed, and you're going to see their peak years in their late 20s, and they start to fade away in their 30s. Now, you do have some guys on PEDs that kind of reinvented time. Won't say names. I don't want to get sued. 713-780-3776. I saw this news that Michael Brantley is going to be in uniform. He's going to be a special advisor for the Astros. Was at camp the other day, actually. Yep. So it kind of got my mind thinking. Because I was like, I'd love to see Michael Brantley take up a bench spot on this team. I know it's not likely, but entertain me for a second. Who would you rather come out of retirement and play for Houston? Michael Brantley or J.J. Watt? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I am Branham. Michael Brantley was at West Palm Beach. Joe Espada is saying that Brantley's going to be a special advisor. Probably going to see him in uniform, a special advisor. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe baseball pants and a three-quarter zip, little wind jacket. Who would you rather come out of retirement to play for Houston? Because I want both of these guys to come out of retirement, if I'm being honest. Michael Brantley coming out of retirement to be a backup outfield, you know, pinch hitter off the bench. Cool. Sign me up for that. Jake Myers stinks at the start of the year. Cool. Chaz, my center fielder, and then Brantley, Yordan, Cher, left field DH, like we saw last year in the playoffs. I would love that. I would love J.J. Watt to come out of retirement. When he retired last year, he was still playing at a very high level. So I would love both of them to come back. You only get one, though. One of them you can force to come out of retirement. Who would you pick?
For me, it's Brantley. I just feel like Brantley in the playoffs and down the stretch last year, even though we waited all year and it was frustrating, he didn't disappoint once he got into uniform. And I believe he's still got plenty left in the tank. And he's not that far removed from the game to where his body's changed at all. He's not going to be counted on to be like they can rest him plenty. They have a deep enough lineup. But I think that when we talk about the left-handed bat that was so sorely needed for this team in the offseason, you and I both wanted it. We didn't get it. He's still there. You and I talked about in the offseason, hey, if Uncle Mike does us a solid because you overpaid for basically three-quarters of the season for him to not play, if he gives you a $5 or $6 million a year, one-year deal, comes back, and you use him off the bench, would that be good enough? I'd sign up right now. I think with JJ, the biggest problem to me is he's been removed enough now. He's kind of shrunk. He's not in that defensive lineman mold anymore in terms of, and he's even said that. Yeah, he still works out, but he lost the bulk. He lost kind of all of the extra size. And I would worry, I'd worry that he's getting a little bit more fragile that as he gets older. And not to say that Brantley hasn't, but of the two, I think Brantley has the bigger impact on their team.
Oh, I'm going to go J.J. Watt. To me, I'm going for bigger impact as well. Like, you know, I like all my Houston teams. I'm going to go bigger impact, and I think Watt would have a bigger impact than Brantley. You look at what J.J. Watt did a couple of years ago with Arizona. He was in double-digit sacks. You know, they're right around the same age, especially relative to, like, their football lives. Watt, I think, can still be, like, close. Not that he's going to be anywhere close to what he was in his final year. He had 12.5 sacks in 2022. Like, I think he can be a third down, get to the quarterback, maybe have 7 or 8 sacks, whereas Michael Brantley, like, what does he add to your offense? Like, he adds a veteran hitter. What can he do at this stage of his career? I'm going to go with who I think has a higher ceiling, and I think that J.J. Watt has a higher ceiling.
But Jeremy, we talked about this. We talked about this with, like, the Deshaun conversation. Like, when you get removed from football, there's something to your body being conditioned to the hitting and the and all the physicality and the
grooming.
Where it's where it's just like for baseball, you just pick up a bat and swing it the way Brantley showed he could do after sitting out three quarters of a season. That's why I lean Brantley.
Brantley can definitely roll out of bed and get three hits. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it would be great to have them both. If I got to choose one, I'm taking Uncle Mike.
3311 says Gronk was able to get big again. 713-780-3776. You get to force a guy out of retirement to play in Houston, Michael Brantley or J.J. Watt, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Pena, you're in the hive of the bees. What do you think, Pena?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, quick question. If they come out of retirement, are we getting their prime or are we getting them right now?
Right now.
Now, if it's right now, I'm going with J.J. Watt. I feel like he would affect the Texans a lot more than Brantley and the Astros because he might break his arm again or something. You know, he'd break his shoulder. But if it's prime, if it's their best, I'm going to go with Uncle Mike.
Pena, you got to go back to asking the Mailbag Monday questions.
Yeah, you just made the list, Pena. Like, J.J. Watt was a three-time defensive player of the year.
Tell him you're the best defensive player of all time. Arguably the best defensive player of all time.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going that far.
I said arguably.
Maybe of our generation.
One of only three players to win three defensive player of the year awards.
Lawrence Taylor would like to have
a word. Sorry, Pena. We love you, Pena. We love you. We're going to have to hang up on
that. That's just...
Blasphemy. Now, it is good you made that call on a Thursday because it is Bad Take Boulevard, and you made the list, Pena. At their prime, you're going to turn down the defensive player of the year that got 20.5 sacks two different times for a D'Amico Ryans defense opposite of Will Anderson? Like, you kidding me?
For Michael Brantley, who, okay.
I mean, Brantley was good.
Yeah, I mean, good, really but good. He wasn't that good. I mean, Brantley, he's not J.J. Watt good.
Brantley's best year was 14, probably. Finished third in MVP voting. Had an 890 OPS, 20 home runs. Like, that's a good player. That's a really good player. That's not the best offensive player in the league like J.J. Watt was defensively. Like, J.J. Watt in his prime with this defense opposite of Will Anderson would be the best duo in the NFL. Like, would be sick. That would be unbelievable.
This is a no-brainer if they're both in their prime.
And for sure.
And Pena was completely off base.
9964, I don't think J.J. Watt can hit the curveball, so I'd rather have Michael Brantley come out of retirement. Okay, you're an Astro fan over Texans.
Okay,
can Michael Brantley
shed a block?
Well, I think that he's just showing that his interest is more with the Astros than the Texans, which is fine. Like, people are going to think that way. And, like, if you're more of an Astro fan, then you're going to take Brantley. If you're more of a Texan fan, you're going to take Watt. Really, the question only works for people who like both. 0-0-1-1, J.J. Watt, leadership, Texans need defensive line help, awesome mentor to the team. It's a good one. Mike would be a good mentor, too. 50-10, give me Uncle Mike all day. J.J. is too skinny and his spiky hair wouldn't even fit in his helmet.
I think some of these, though, are kind of the same. I think they both would be good leaders. I think they both address needs, so those are kind of a wash. Like, the Astros and Texans both have needs where these guys would be. I just think I would take Watt because Brantley, even when he's helpful, he's playing, every other day? You got to worry about him missing basically, a season and a half when his shoulder acts up. So it worries Watt. When we last saw him on the field, he was, I know Pro Bowls don't matter, but he was still at a Pro Bowl level of play with 12.5 sacks. So I would take Watt in this scenario.
Watt wouldn't be more than a third down pass rusher for me either. Unless
I still think he helps you more often than Brantley.
I do, too. I'm with you on that because you do have to – like, if you're saying who they are right now, well, Brantley's coming off shoulder surgery and played 22 games last year. Watt didn't play at all but didn't have injuries. Maybe he's fresh. 3878, Brantley for sure. Football physical requirements are way more strenuous than baseball. J.J. wouldn't be near as meaningful to the Texans as Brantley would be for the Astros. Brantley played in 22 games last year, and he's a year removed off of that. Easy, J.J. Watt. If Brantley comes out of retirement, then that means the Astros either are having lots of injuries or aren't hitting good. That's from Jasper. That's a good point. This guy says Carlos Beltran on the 19 Astros would be sick. Not the conversation.
If you agree, if you said it yourself, if he rolls out of bed and gives you three hits, and you know that he did it at the end of last year, and you know that's basically one of the only missing links that you might be able to point to for this Astros team in the middle of the bullpen, I think you're talking about the difference between competing for a World Series this year And from the Texans, you are competing for a playoff, but I don't think you're there yet on Super Bowl.
I think you're overrating what Brantley did last year for the Astros, though. Like, we know that he's, like, a good professional hitter, but Brantley, he had 57 plate appearances last year for the Astros. 278 batting average, okay. 298 on base, that's not good. 426 slugging, that's okay. 724 OPS for a left fielder, eh. You know, like that's a premium offensive position, not great. And then you look at what he did in the playoffs for the Astros. In the division series, he was 3-for-12, not bad, with a homer. And then in the ALCS, he was 2-for-17.
I just think, similar to what you said about J.J. being a situational pass rusher, you're not going to play Uncle Mike in left field every day, and you've got the guys to where he can just, you know, be a pinch hitter off the bench, and he can be plug and play a left, and he's not going to be, like, taxed. But when he's up there, I'd take his eye at the plate and ability to swing the bat over most guys that I could choose from.
Sure, but the question isn't most, like, Brantley versus most guys. It's Brantley having that role versus J.J. Watt's role with the Texans.
Yeah, I would also point out that, like, take both of these guys off of the team, and what is the hole that they're filling? Like, the Astros, without Brantley there, still have, what, a top three, at worst, a top five offense? Whereas the Texans, I think Watt could have a more transformative impact on the Texans, adding that second pass rusher that they so desperately need.
713-780-ESPN, Brantley or Watt, you get to force one of them to come out of retirement. Who are you taking? Also, what is the recent history of acquiring a running back in free agency? What does that do for a team? Is it good? Is it bad? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.